Hello, listener. Thank you for still staying tuned in Indonesia today through our audio streaming voinews.id and RRI Digital. I'm Nuka Kusmawati and I will accompany you to complete your weekend with highlight of the week. Let's begin with the first info where Indonesian government appreciates Mentari program supporting energy transition in Indonesia. The Indonesian government through the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Resources expressed its appreciation for the implementation of the Mentari programs, a collaboration between the Indonesian and UK government in supporting the energy transition in Indonesia. Andi Romdoni has the details.
The Indonesian government through the Ministry of Energy and Mineral Resources in collaboration with the British government collaborates in the Low Carbon Energy Program towards Indonesia's Low Carbon Energy Transition or Mentari. Since its inception in 2020, Mentari has provided support to develop policies, renewable energy projects, and investments with inclusive practices to realize a just energy transition in Indonesia. In the Mentari Day, encouraging a just and inclusive energy transition through the UK-Indonesia Partnership Forum in Jakarta, Thursday, Secretary General of the Indonesian Ministry of Energy and Mineral Resources, Dadan Kusdiana, expressed his appreciation for the various achievements obtained by the Mentari program over the past 5 years that can be improved in the second phase for the next 5 years.
Kita berterima kasih kepada semua, termasuk kepada diri sendiri bahwa kita sudah berhasil.
We thank everyone, including ourselves, that we have succeeded in working together for 5 years for the first phase with such long results that have had a lot of impact. And we look forward to the second. God willing, with the first experience, the result will be at least 2. The first will be bigger and the second will be faster. The Mentari Day Forum is a wrap-up and closing of the first phase of the Mentari program from 2020 to 2025. It is a low-carbon energy partnership between Indonesia and the UK and has produced a number of concrete programs. They include a blueprint of communal off-grid management by village-owned enterprises, utilization of the trust fund framework that has been formed, and development of learning tools. The forum is also a bridge to Mentari Phase 2, strengthening the partnership between the UK and Indonesia and showcasing it as a successful international collaboration model for an inclusive and sustainable energy transition.
Next, we have information about Indonesia reaffirms commitment to peaceful regions at 58th ASEAN Foreign Ministers Meeting. Ranoff has the details.
Director General for ASEAN Cooperation at the Indonesian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Siddharto Reza Suryodipuro, stated on Thursday at the attendance of Indonesian Foreign Minister Sugiono at the ASEAN Foreign Minister meeting reflects Indonesia's strong commitment to a peaceful, stable, and prosperous ASEAN region. Minister Sugiono is scheduled to attend the AMM in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia from July 8 to 11. During a press briefing in Jakarta, Siddharto explained that the 58th ASEAN Foreign Minister meeting will cover a range of important topics, including ASEAN partnership.
Partisipasi aktif Indonesia.
Indonesia's active participation, particularly through the presence of the foreign minister in this series of meetings, is clear evidence of the country's strong commitment to ASEAN and with ASEAN to ensure that the region remains peaceful, stable, and prosperous, fully aligned with Indonesia's national interests and government priorities.
Stabil, sejahtera, dan tentunya sesuai dengan kepentingan nasional dan kepentingan pemerintah Indonesia.
Siddharto noted that the EMM forum will serve as an opportunity for ASEAN countries to discuss various regional and international issues. In addition to attending the 58th ASEAN Foreign Minister meeting, Minister Sugiono is also scheduled to take part in several other sessions, including a meeting with the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commissions on Human Rights and bilateral meetings with partner countries such as China, Japan, and South Korea.
Now we have information about Minister Erlangga conveys a plan to purchase energy from the United States. Andi Romdoni has the details.
Indonesian Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs Erlangga Hartarto in Jakarta on Thursday held a coordination meeting with a number of stakeholders in an effort to respond to the United States tariff policy against Indonesia. In a statement, he conveyed Indonesia's plan to purchase energy worth 15 billion rupiah, including the purchase of agricultural goods and investment plans. According to Erlangga, Indonesia and the United States will sign a memorandum of understanding in the near future to realize this cooperation.
Jadi tadi sudah dibahas tentang rencana Indonesia mengenai pembelian energi.
So earlier we discussed Indonesia's plan to purchase energy which could total 15.5 billion rupiah. Then also related to the purchase of agricultural goods and also related to investment plans including by state enterprises and Danantara, an Indonesian sovereign wealth fund. So the plan is to hold an agreement or memorandum of understanding between Indonesia and its partners in the United States on July 7th. And it shows that Indonesia incorporated, so between the government, regulators and business people, state enterprises and the private sector together to respond related to the imposition of reciprocal tariffs. Erlangga also said that currently the Indonesian negotiating team is in Washington, D.C. to follow up on tariff negotiations with the United States. He also emphasized Indonesia's position in responding to the U.S. tariff policy seriously. According to him, Indonesia has submitted a number of offers, both verbally and in writing, in the context of tariff negotiations with the United States. The offers have been submitted to the authorities, including the U.S. Trade Representatives and the U.S. Secretary of Treasury.
Let's move on to our next info, where United Kingdom's Mentari program strengthens people-to-people relations with Indonesia. Andi Romdoni has the details.
Charge the affairs of the British Embassy in Jakarta, Matthew Downing, on Thursday in Jakarta said that the Mentari program, which has been running for 5 years, from 2020 to 2025, has shown that collaboration is not only to achieve results, but also to strengthen people-to-people relations, supported by trust. The Mentari program is a collaboration between the Indonesian and British government in supporting Indonesia's energy transition. In the Mentari Day Forum, which was held as the closing of the Mentari Phase 1 program and the opening of the Mentari Phase 2 program, Matthew Downing said that the achievement of the Mentari Phase 1 was not only about achieving numbers, but strengthening partnerships based on mutual trust.
It's that this is what real partnership looks like. It's not just about numbers or reports, it's about the people. At the core of this journey is the strong and trusted partnership between the British Embassy Jakarta, the British government, ESDM. Our collective efforts have laid the foundation for a more sustainable and equitable energy future. And this is not just a reflection of what we've achieved from the past 5 years, but also a call to everyone to continue building this momentum together.
In his remarks, Matthew Downing mentioned a number of achievements of the Mentari program over the past 5 years in advancing the energy transition in Indonesia, starting from the formation of a policy framework encouraging green investment to empowering rural communities. This program, according to him, has also supported the development of the first national hydrogen strategy in Indonesia. He said that this makes Indonesia one of the leading countries in developing clean energy technology, achievements that are the foundation for a cleaner and more inclusive energy future for Indonesia.
Our next info is about Indonesian government strengthens Sharia financing for micro, small and medium enterprises. Ranoff has the details.
The Indonesian government is committed to strengthening Sharia-based financing for micro, small, and medium enterprises. This was confirmed by Putu Rahwidiyasa, Director of Sharia Business and Entrepreneurship at the National Committee for Islamic Economy and Finance during the MSME Day webinar titled Sharia Financing Innovation for MSMEs held on Friday. Putu explained that the development of the Sharia economy has been made a national priority in the 2025 until 2029 National Medium-Term Development Plan. One of its main focuses is the strengthening of the halal industry and halal MSMEs as the top priority activity.
This shows the government's commitment to increasing the added value and competitiveness of entrepreneurs in Indonesia. That's why strengthening capital through Sharia-based financing and funding instruments plays a strategic role in improving both the resilience and competitiveness of businesses.
The government aims for bank financing, including from Sharia financial institutions for micro, small, and medium enterprises, to reach 21.5% by 2029. In addition, there is a need to build open dialogue between entrepreneurs and financial institutions, facilitated by regulator, so that Sharia financing innovation can better match the real need of MSMEs player.
Coming up next, information about Indonesia is stepping up its sports diplomacy as pencaksilat meets a key requirement to enter the 2028 Olympic Games. Ofra has the details.
Indonesian Minister of Youth and Sports Dito Aryo Tejo stated that pencaksilat Indonesian martial art has fulfilled one of the main requirements to be contested at the 2028 Olympic in Los Angeles, complying with international anti-doping standards. He conveyed this after the inauguration of the West Sumatra Provincial Board of the Indonesian Pencaksilat Association in Padang Thursday. According to Dito, meeting the anti-doping requirement is an initial step in sport diplomacy to push for international recognition of pencaksilat, including the opportunity for it to be featured in events such as the Youth Olympic Games and the Asian Games.
Anti-doping compliance is a key and essential requirement for a sport to be recognized by the International Olympic Committee. The next step is to gain support from other countries. This is part of our strategy. We are also working to have pencaksilat included in events like the ASEAN Games and the Youth Olympic Games. These efforts are part of the lobbying and support diplomacy we are currently carrying out.
Dito also highlighted that pencaksilat should not only be seen as a sport, but also as a cultural and tourist attraction, particularly in West Sumatra. Currently, the central government is developing a cluster system to support regions with unique characteristics in promoting and growing pencaksilat.
Last but not least, we have info about Indonesia is stepping up efforts to protect the critical endangered Mahakam dolphins through strengthened conservation and law enforcement. Ofra has the details.
The Indonesian government continues its efforts to save the Mahakam dolphin, a rare freshwater mammal now classified as critically endangered in East Kalimantan. Minister of Environment Hanif Faisal Nurofik, during a visit to Pela Village, Kutai Kartanegara Regency on Thursday, reaffirmed the government's commitment to improving the dolphin's ecosystem by limiting activities that could damage its natural habitat. Pela Village is now being strengthened as a conservation base supported by law enforcement to prevent land clearing and environmental disturbance that are the main causes of habitat degradation. These efforts aim to restore the Mahakam dolphin population and prevent the extinction of this iconic species.
We will immediately carry out environmental monitoring and mapping related to all upstream activities along the Pela River. If these activities are found to cause significant sedimentation, As reported by Mr. Alimin from the Rasi Foundation and Mr. Darwish earlier, we will take action through environmental supervision and law enforcement, both civil and criminal, to protect the dolphins.
Minister Hanif stated that the Mahakam dolphin, an icon of East Kalimantan's wildlife, now has only a few dozen individuals remaining and is being closely monitored by the Rasi Foundations. In 2025, three dolphin calves were recorded to have been burned in the Pela River, offering new hope for the species' survival. With their habitat increasingly shrinking, the dolphins are now mostly active in the tributaries of the Mahakam River, especially the Pela River and Cascade Lake in Kutai Kartanegara. This conservation effort reflects Indonesia's strong commitment to protecting endangered species and preserving biodiversity.
Listener, that was some information that happens in Indonesia this week on Highlight of the Week.
Of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Welcome back, listener, and thank you for staying tuned in Indonesia Today. Listener, now let's listen to an interview on VOI Talk with Bapak Tengku Reza Shah, PhD, lecturer in International Relations at Padjajaran University and President University, hosted by Rahma.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz FM 4755 kHz and via streaming on vonews.id and RRE Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you. Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world. Listener, today's VOI talk from Voice of Indonesia informs you about Indonesia, which is preparing to send new representatives to the world. The government is expected to submit a list of ambassador candidates to the House of Representatives on Wednesday this week, including the nominee for the United States, one of Indonesia's most strategic diplomatic partners. The real question is, who fits the role? What makes someone truly capable of speaking for a nation on the global stage? So let's explore the ideal qualities of an ambassador, the challenges and more, with Bapak Teuku Reza Syah, PhD, an international relations expert from Pajajaran and President University. Good morning, Pak Teuku. Thank you so much for joining us on VOI Talk. Okay, sorry, we couldn't hear your voice clearly. Can you say once again how's you're doing today? And we really thank you for joining us.
Good morning to you. My name is Teuku Reza Syah. I'm teaching international relations at Pajajaran State University and also President University. This is a private university. Both are located in West Java Province.
Okay, then we can clearly hear you. And as an international expert from Pajajaran University and President University, by looking at the basic qualifications, in your view, what defines someone as ready to represent Indonesia as an ambassador?
Well, this is the great question at this very moment, yeah, because today the Commission 1 of the Indonesian Parliament is consulting someone who will become the next ambassador. Of course, the president has nominated him, but anyway, him or her, but anyway, that person has to consult the Indonesian Parliament. What are the qualifications? I'm sure whoever becoming the Indonesian ambassador, he or she should have certain qualifications. Number one is nationalistic. Yeah. In this case, that person understands fully the Indonesian ideology, Pancasila, and also understand completely Indonesian constitution. And also the person has a capacity to translate the idea of Astacita or eight ideas of the Indonesian development into practices. And then, of course, that person should have an advanced understanding on international law, on diplomacy, on the ongoing bilateral relations, and also globalization. In short, that person should have qualities in terms of intellectual quotient, emotional quotient, spiritual quotient, leadership quotient, and managerial quotient. It is very difficult to find one. So that's why in some posts, we cannot easily put someone there.
So how do traits like diplomacy, empathy, negotiation, ability play a role in the ambassador's daily work?
Yes, if we refer to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, 1961, and Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, 1963, we will find that the job of ambassador is so huge and full of responsibility. For example, reporting and then representing. From there, negotiating. And after that, protecting and promoting. With regards to trade, trade is very important. So that's why when it comes to negotiation, Indonesian ambassadors should have advanced quality in all rules and regulations at the global level, and also rules and regulations at the Indonesian level, and then also rules and regulations at the bilateral level. In this case, ambassadors will have to deal not only with the official partners, but will also have to deal with business partners and also work hard to open markets for Indonesian economy. Of course, based on mutual benefits and also based on the principles such as sovereignty and territorial integrity.
An ambassador, of course, will interact with the locals. So another crucial factor is cultural sensitivity. Don't you think so? Why is it vital for ambassadors? Correct. Why is it vital then for ambassadors to deeply understand the host country's culture and political climate?
It is very important because we in Indonesia we have a principles of fish living with water. Well, in this case, ambassadors should have a complete understanding on the life of the host country. In this case, a full understanding on the political system, how it works, understanding on how the ideology is working, and also understanding on how the people are living there. In this case, the capacity to use the local language is very important, apart from mastering international languages. For example, this is very crucial for country like Russia, for country like South Korea, North Korea, Germany, Japan, and anyway, all parts of the world, once they have their own national language, Indonesian ambassador must have a good understanding. If necessary, Indonesian ambassador should speak at the advanced level so that they can communicate using formal language and also informal language. That's why it is very, very difficult. And especially the president, he has a very high standard in nominating someone.
Yes, because of course every country has a different cultural approach, right? So another ability that must be owed. And when it comes to political climate, global geopolitical situation, this is also what is emphasized by the Indonesian House of Representatives Speaker Puan Maharani. That's her expectation. What do you think about this expectation?
Well, expectation from the Indonesian Parliament, it is very, very serious. Yeah. Because in today's diplomacy, we are having also parliamentary diplomacy and then the normal diplomacy or the traditional diplomacy. Governments may come and go, but the parliament stay. So in this case, we expect to have a tandem relations when it comes to diplomacy. In this case, Indonesian ambassadors are expected also to support the national parliament to better deal with the parliament of the hosted country. In this case, parliaments they need to travel, they need to consult to each other because long term commitment needs to be supported by the parliament of the two countries.
Political connections often come into play. How do we balance merit, professionalism, and political considerations in the appointments of ambassadors?
You are right there. When we see ambassadors, we can differentiate. We can categorize them into two things. Yeah, first, career diplomat, and then non-career diplomat. Yeah, for the career diplomat, they have been there for more than 25 years, and they have climbed the ladder from the lowest one to the highest one, beginning with attaché, and then third secretary, second secretary, first secretary, and then chancellor, minister, chancellor, minister, then come ambassador. So when it comes to career diplomat, they have had enough trainings from the basic level, the midterm level, and advanced level. But we also recognize that there is a prerogative of the president to nominate someone from the from the non-diplomatic pool of people. They may come from the professionals, such as academic stream, and then military stream, political stream, maybe also political stream, and also parliamentary stream. But in this case, usually the president has a good knowledge that this person should have a managerial quotient, leadership quotient, and good intellectual quotient, and also a good nationalism. Because even though they are coming from outside the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but they have had special trainings for this. And for people who are coming from the military background, a police background, or educational background, throughout their career path, they have had enough education and training. But anyway, when we talk about once someone is trusted to become ambassador, this person have to put Indonesia first, not sectoral ego. Not sectoral ego any longer. So we need to think of Indonesia incorporated. So in this case, once ambassador is appointed, that person should put Indonesia first, and then his educational background, his political background second, because he is loyal to the nation. In this case, he's loyal to the president of Indonesia, who trusted him or her to represent Indonesia overseas.
So no matter how diverse the backgrounds of the ambassador candidates, from diplomats, military, business, and so on, so he or she must put forward Indonesia first.
Excuse me, I cannot clearly hear your voice. We have about 200 kilometers distance at the moment.
Okay. Now, can you hear me clearly? Pak Teguh?
Yes.
Okay.
Please excuse me, I cannot clearly hear your voice.
Okay, what about now? Because we can clearly hear your voice right now. Yes, Pak Teguh?
Yes.
Okay.
Excuse me for the bad connection, yeah?
Okay, so we're talking about the ambassador's diversity background. Now you can hear me.
Yes. Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay. So we're talking about the diversity of the background of the ambassador's candidate. So no matter how diverse the background is, he or she must put forward Indonesia. That's the bottom line, right? Okay. Now, what about talking about the challenges? Yes. The challenges, especially for those sent to global powers like the United States. What are the pressures and expectations for such a high-level posting? Yes, Pak Teguh?
Yes, I think when it comes to When it comes to diplomatic post, Indonesia, we recognize that some countries are to be considered we need to give a very special attention for this. United States is among the one. We call United States, and then EU countries, ASEAN countries as D1, I mean diplomatic one. Yeah. When dealing with United States, I think we need to find to really find the most appropriate ambassador for the country, and also the good understanding on the American political system, and then the dynamics in the American bureaucracy at this very moment, and then also the decision-making process in the United States, which involves many institutions, not only state and non-state institutions, but also private institutions. And also we need to understand the dynamics of the state's level. U.S. has 50 states. We need to understand also the dynamics there. So that's why Indonesian ambassador to the United States must fully understand not only Indonesia, but also the bilateral relations, and also the strategic role of the U.S. in the world. So in this case, the deep understanding on the philosophy is there, a deep understanding on the strategic role of the U.S. in the world is there. Because oftenly, ambassadors need to make a quick decision. So not to cause hassle to the president. That's why an ambassador to the U.S. must specially receive the Indonesian president approval in advance, and also special trust from the Indonesian president.
Knowledge and decision making skill really difficult indeed. And from the US, we talk about the global tensions, the current global tensions, climate issues, digital diplomacy. What kind of ambassadorial mindset do we need moving forward, Pak Teguh?
Well, in this case, ambassadors, once the person is stationed, he will deal with the state and also with the media. That's why a good understanding on modern diplomacy is very important, and a good understanding on globalization is very important. So that's why an Indonesian ambassador needs to be smart. In this case, I'm not talking about degree, but degree is preferred, because degree will help an ambassador to deal with the local campuses, local research center, and of course, someone with advanced knowledge will easily link himself or herself with the local academic environment, research centers. So that's why, in order to be highly professional, ambassadors will have to travel a lot in the country to provide keynote speeches and then to attend conferences. And then through these conferences, the ambassador will have the opportunity to explain Indonesian position on what is going on. For example, today we are witnessing a lot of critical situation. For example, the Israeli war against Iran, and then the life in Gaza, and then also the ongoing war but involving Russia and Ukraine, and then also the U.S. tariff, a new kind of tariff. I think ambassador needs to understand the situation and also needs to put Indonesian position in such a soft way. So that's why ambassador should also understand when it comes to making comments, Indonesian free and active foreign policy must be explained. That we are part of the world, but we are not taking side, but we are looking hard to support the UN Charter. So these are, among others, the philosophy before an ambassador speak in public.
So how can a strong ambassador elevate Indonesia's presence and soft power abroad from a public diplomacy perspective?
Yeah, you are right. Public diplomacy is very urgent at this very moment, because when it comes to diplomacy, we need to attract also the role of Indonesians living inside, because they have a voice. They have a voice in the modern diplomacy. So that's why public diplomacy interaction is very important, involving Indonesian over here and then the Americans over there.
And if only you could design the ideal ambassador for Indonesia today, can you name three core values or competencies would be non-negotiable? Well, listeners, seems like we have a technical problem that is faced in today's VOI talk, talking about Ambassador Wanted, who fits with our today's speaker, Teguh Reza Shah, PhD, an international relation expert from Pajajaran University and President University. So today, the Indonesian government is set to submit a list of ambassador candidates to the Indonesian House of Representatives on Wednesday this week, including the nominee for the United States, one of Indonesia's most strategic diplomatic partners. We are still trying to reconnect with Pak Teguh Reza Shah for a quicker, thoughtful discussion. Okay, now let's try to reconnect with Pak Teguh Reza Shah for a final statement here. Hello, Pak Teguh.
Yes, I'm back again.
Okay.
Hello again. I'm back now.
Yes, Pak Teguh. I would like to find out from your view about if you could design the ideal ambassador for Indonesia today, what three core values or competencies that you can mention that would be non-negotiable?
Well, the non-negotiable items among other nationalism, and then good understanding on the importance of international law, and then adherence to the ongoing treaties at the bilateral level, and also the two and the bilateral countries' role at the global level through various kind of international treaties. This is very important. This is the basic line.
Okay, then final statement, please, from you, your hope or any other messages you would like to convey on the submission of ambassador candidates on Wednesday.
I think the candidates are having a bit headache, yeah, how to deal with the Indonesian parliament, and I pray that they could pass this final examination and finally they can represent Indonesia in the destined country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Pak Teguh Reza Shah, PhD, for such a thoughtful, insightful discussion. Ambassadors must not only represent Indonesia, they must connect, engage, and inspire trust. Their voice is our voice abroad. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Well, listeners, that's today's VOI Talk, Ambassador Wanted, who fits with Pak Teguh Reza Shah, PhD, an international relation expert from Pajajaran University and President's University. Stay tuned for more insightful, inspiring talks on VOI Talks from Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz, and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Yang lalu hilang tanpa bayang. Digital with New Look, various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments, and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRE Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRE Digital.
Every time we fall, man, we gotta get up. You ain't gotta be down, gotta keep your head up. Everything's gonna be okay. Gotta keep looking for a better day.
So cara-cara lain biar kita bahagia. Even when the whole world falling apart, never really meant for you to lose your heart, but everything gonna be okay.
Seiring langkah kita terjalin indah, mentari bersinar cerah. Sedihmu usai, kita merangkai awal baru.
Terus melangkah ke depan. Takkan ada lelah, takkan menyerah. We gon' make it through, kamu dan aku, yeah.
Put your love up, turn your head down. Put your love up, turn your head down. Pray to the high above, feel the seven sound. Mari baku bantu sampai lepas dari lockdown.
Satu hati, yeah.
Indonesia is coming up shortly. Stay tuned with us, Voice of Indonesia.
Ethnic and cultural diversity will never be separated from Kalimantan. The island is known for its indigenous Dayak tribes, spread out in four provinces and part of Sarawak, Malaysia. The Ibans are among the 162 Dayak sub-ethnics who live in province of West Kalimantan and Sarawak in Malaysia. The largest community of the Ibans have settled in the border region between Sintang and Kapuas Hulu districts, while the rest, about 40%, are in the region of Sarawak, Malaysia. As the second oldest tribe, after the Kayans in West Kalimantan, the Ibans keep their ancestors' traditions and culture, which are still strongly binding the people's lives. These have been handed down for generations, and which until now are still maintained. Among others is berpantun, chanting poems in rhymes. For the Ibans, berpantun is a form of praise or satire chanted by a kind of storyteller or singer called pemantun, who depicts figures of the kayangan or heaven. The female pemantun is called kumang, whereas the male is called keling. A pemantun has special skills to string words and sing lyrics like a singer. The poems or lyrics usually use more figurative language like metaphors. Following is an Iban poem chanting called Pantun Rangsang, or stimulating or motivating poem, which is meant to encourage and motivate people to fight.
Kumada batang timyang alanzi kumae orang de tanam segadam de lubang hujan hujak seganti da pindu wari sari to bedao menyamasiah dadgi kena ranungga tisi puang aka lunang langiat habe gitang. Kita ek banyak mayuah betalisi semua. Kita ek berindai dia deruah dua di tika nyam diri uji kita boy muan kada kun munusuan ke kita ralaki siguan pantuan ribuan sino diati. Namun bah gigi tak sangat adilah seri dah buang gigi kada menton gaya kanya di nyariah rarai munyi balikan raja kayan taman munti kena sanggup jari ayah si tunyo butang.
The chanting of Iban poems is used to send off those who are living to perform certain tasks. With duration of about 10 to 30 minutes, it aims to give spirit and motivation to a person or a group of people so that they will be brave and earnest in performing their duties. This Iban tradition of berpantun according to Gansa Anak Juntao, a cultural observer on the border of West Kalimantan, Indonesia and Sarawak, Malaysia, is only performed during specific events, like harvest festivals, celebrations, and special occasions such as the departure of somebody who is going to perform certain duties. The rhymes contain prayer besides having an element of entertainment. They are also considered sacred and serve as offerings to Betara or God.
Ya, pantun yang kita dengar tadi itu adalah pantun Perangsang, di mana di situ mengandung syair yang dilantunkan.
Yes, the one we listened just now was a pantun Perangsang, which words are sung in such a way that is nice to listen to. Well, it is called pantun Perangsang, a stimulating or motivating poem, and it is meant to provide motivation and spirit to a group of people who will carry out their duties. Yes, she sang the poem, which means she was praying, and then she gave some advice what should and should not be done, so that people who carry out the task will do it carefully. Well, there is also an element of entertainment, usually during gawai or a celebration. It can be after the harvest, in a thanksgiving, before rice in planting, or in welcoming special guests. This can also be held specifically for sending off those who will depart to carry out certain tasks.
In general, the Iban's poems, both in the past as well as in its present implementation, have been widely used in various versions for different purposes, like pantun tujuan or poem with purpose, or sindiran or satires, which are meant for the guests or even the authorities or the government. In this case, the pemantun becomes a representative of the people in expressing their deep feeling. Though the lines or word used in the Iban's poems mostly are acronyms, they are able to arouse the listener and have a powerful meaning to those who hear and understand them. Most pemantun are women, but it does not mean men cannot sing or deliver the poems. Today, such poems are less in demand among the young generation of the Ibans. However, this cultural heritage of the second oldest Dayak tribe in Kalimantan Island should be preserved, because in addition to having a religious value, the poems are also part of national culture, which are useful and not easily eroded by time. That was Budaya Nusantara, Archipelagic Culture, presented by RRI Antikong. Until next time.